I'm Rex Salisbury, and this is the Cambrian FinTech Podcast. On this show, we talk to the founders, operators, and investors who are shaping the future of financial services.
There is a lot of pessimism right now about FinTech, about San Francisco. I'm here in Plaid's beautiful downtown SF headquarters to talk to the founder and CEO, Zach, and ask him whether or not it's warranted. Should be a lot of fun. We've got 200 people coming. It's going to be a packed room. First in-person event I've done in 4 years. Very excited to bring the energy back to this amazing ecosystem.
I am Rex, and actually the very last in-person event I did was with Plaid in this room about 4 years ago. So it's very exciting to be back here with Zach. So Zach, I'll invite you up. So, Zach, you sent me a text November 28th, 2:18 p.m., and you're like, Rex, we should do an event. Why did you want to do an event?
Okay. Well, first, thank you for having me. Thank you for organizing the event, and thank you to everyone that came out. We're super happy to have you all here. I sent Rex a text because I felt like the vibe for FinTech was dead, and it feels like the vibe for FinTech in San Francisco has been dead for 3 years, but it's just the vibe because the underlying companies are still amazing. And I wanted to try to rebuild the vibe for FinTech in San Francisco. And I couldn't imagine a better community than all of you and Cambrian and Rex as an organizer to do that. And so I want to start investing in doing more in-person stuff together, bringing the FinTech community together. We've done these in a bunch of different cities. San Francisco is by far my favorite to do it. But the vibe of FinTech in New York is pretty good right now. And so I don't want New York to win. So that's all I have.
That's great. And I think, you know, this is also just a special ecosystem. I know it's been a special place for you to build a company. It's been a special place for me to build a community. I think you're right. It's just time to kind of rebuild a little bit of that energy. And there is a lot of energy and a lot of people doing interesting stuff here.
Yeah, we need to turn the engine on.
Yeah. How are you thinking about that in terms of what Plaid is doing to bring energy back, both just with your in-office versus remote culture and just with other activities generally?
So, I mean, I don't have a great answer on that. The interesting thing that I've seen is that the fundamentals of the FinTech market are doing a lot better this year for so many different reasons. And the energy that we're starting to see, especially at the earliest stages, is really, really good. So I was talking to some folks on our team about kind of where we're seeing the fastest growth amongst our customer base. And the number of startups that are signing up right now, the throughput on our self-service channel is the highest that it's ever been, like by a substantial margin. And so for me, this means like there are a lot of green shoots. There's a lot of excitement. There's a lot of people pushing forward. And you know, there's all this macro backdrop of some things are going well, some things are going poorly. Late stage companies are not getting as much funding. Early stage companies are getting a little bit more.
But I think that obscures the late stage stuff, which is real in terms of the depression, obscures a lot of the activity that you're seeing. Like you're signing more new customers than you have before.
I think it obscures that, but also it means that the press narratives are the press. As much as I love the press, they sometimes like to write about the big funding rounds, and they don't like to write about all of the foundational important stuff, which means that we have to talk about the foundational important stuff, which is, again, one of the reasons I wanted to do this.
Yeah. And being Plaid, you often get to see some of these things start to build in momentum before other folks because they start showing up on your platform and through the network in a variety of ways.
Exactly. Yeah. And so bringing people together physically in person has been a priority for me, something that I've talked to our marketing team a lot about. We love the events that we go to, but we don't know why all the events are put in like Las Vegas. They should happen in San Francisco or New York or another places. So we're trying to do a little bit more of this. The thing that I'm currently pitching is I want to do a FinTech hackathon because we launched Plaid at a hackathon. And I think that'd be a really fun one to do. So I might be bugging you for this.
You're
later.
Welcome to bug me. I'll share it out with all these folks. I will say, if you're wondering, can you do an event in San Francisco? Just look around the room. We have a lot of people here. We also had 250 people on the wait list. So there is a lot of energy in terms of people who want to be here, which is pretty awesome.
Apparently there are fire code issues in this room, so
we couldn't fit more people. Which is why we don't have higher capacity, in other words. So talking a little about San Francisco is great. Also, just FinTech generally, I feel like there's a little bit of pessimism. And you were talking about ways, both small and big, that there's some interesting stuff coming back, just like the old being new again, with certain platforms going out of, you know, being phased out, but also other stuff too.
Yeah, I think if I had to theme the comments that I wanted to make today, like the theme would be FinTech optimism. I think it's an incredibly self-serving theme, so you can make fun of me for it later if you'd like to. But We've seen a lot of great green shoots kind of throughout the fintech ecosystem. So for some of the macro trends are starting to move in a positive direction. So interest rates are no longer going up. They're at least stable. They may well come down at some point. And we're starting to see consumers come back and actually start to take loans in a way that we haven't for a few years. The interesting thing is that throughout that last few year period where lending rates have been down, we've seen every lender try to rebuild their internal system to be digital first. And so that's positioned a lot of fintechs to do really, really well as the tailwinds start to come back in. If you look at the investing space, we've seen the same thing. Like basically all new account opening in investing has shifted to digital. You've seen a lot of the big banks, you've seen a lot of the new startups like really invest in digital account opening. And that's like an amazing foundational thing that is going to capture a lot of value as the tailwinds start to come. And then we've just seen amazing innovation in the earliest stages. So the number, as I said, of early stage startups that we have, the number of early stage fintech companies that are getting funded, that ecosystem is really strong. And I think that over the next year, we're going to start to see that trickle more and more.
And as an investor, I can speak to this too. There are the number of pre-seed and seed deals getting done has been very stable through this cycle, which isn't necessarily visible because they aren't going to be putting up big headlines because A, they take 12 months to announce, and B, they're not as big of rounds, so they're not as interesting to write about. But they are happening.
Also, Bitcoin's back, so we're going to see another crypto hype cycle, which is going to be great.
Yeah.
Don't quote me on that, please.
What connectivity does Plaid have for crypto right now? And are you thinking about?
Well, we do. We're a part of the on-ramp for most of the crypto exchanges.
Yeah. And then other areas. So we talked about pessimism in fintech. Some of the reasons for optimism. You talked about macroeconomic stability. You talked about rates dropping, just giving some stabilization there. More founders in the ecosystem, better infrastructure, Plaid, other folks. Are there other kind of categories you see that are interesting or other trends going on?
Yeah, I mean, I could go on. I think the list is long. One of the interesting trends that we're seeing is that the banks themselves are starting to buy real software, and they're starting to really invest behind a digital roadmap, and they're starting to do so in a way that is, I'm sure there are probably some people that work at banks here. They're starting to do so in a way that is much more thoughtful, and I think will have a better long-term impact. So. For example, we were in conversations with one of the largest banks, and they said, look, we've taken a partnership first strategy here where we want to build something through partnerships first. We want to prove out that a use case can work, and then we want to go back and maybe decide if we want to build it in-house after that. And that kind of a strategy is something that technology companies have talked about for a really long time. I've never heard a big bank talk like that. And so I think the pressure on the big banks to actually buy software, lean into software, is a really good thing. And I think it creates a lot of opportunity for a lot of fintech companies. And I think when you zoom out into kind of the consumer view, you can see that all of this is just amazing for consumers because they're having more options. They're having more tools and services put in front of them. Everybody's trying to serve them in the place that they are. And I think that's a great thing.
Yeah, totally. And we talk about some of the tailwinds around 1033 and other stuff that particularly pertain to Plaid. Before we jump into that, though, I do want to just frame up kind of the next part of the conversation, which is what is next for Plaid. So Plaid is in its second decade now of existence.
Don't tell me that.
I know. Part of the reason I tell you that is because every
old.
Time I tell you that,
I
can see you die
old,
inside
but I don't
a
feel.
But so anyway, second decade, you guys have connectivity with 1/3 of consumers. You've got 6 new connections being made across the network every second. How should we think about Plaid going forward? Are you a connectivity platform? Are there other things going on? And here you can talk about some of your recent product announcements and
sure,
other things.
Sure, happy to. So let's see, Plaid, if you ask, so the last time that we did this, Plaid was absolutely a connectivity platform. So our goal was to connect bank accounts when a consumer asked us to do so. The easiest way to think of it is V1 of Plaid was an API for your bank account. If you had a bank account at, let's say, JP Morgan, and you needed to connect it to the Venmo app, we did the connection between the JP Morgan account and the Venmo app. Multiply that by 12,000 banks that we integrated with on our kind of supply side, and then 8,000 applications doing all sorts of different things. But basically, we just did that connectivity, and we still do that. That is the foundation of what we do. I call that the open finance platform, or you could call it the open banking platform. But basically, the concept is connect your bank account to things.
And that's foundational, and that's what's below the waterline of the Plaid volcano, is what you're...
There are many jokes to be made about this. So I still don't understand why it's a volcano. It's this incredibly confusing mixed metaphor of an
iceberg. Give us some context for folks who are not familiar with the volcano.
At one point, Plaid sold the company to Visa. Visa acquired Plaid, or at least we signed the paperwork to do so. Then the Department of Justice investigated Visa for antitrust. After a year, they signaled that they were not going to allow us to close the transaction. They signaled a lot of things. And at the end of that year, we unsold the company from Visa, which was one of the most confusing things to do, and frankly, like one of the hardest things that I've ever had to communicate to our team. But in that process, there was a sketch of a volcano that was written by some person who shall remain nameless on the Visa team that ended up in the DOJ's kind of like big letter that they wrote to us and everyone else. And this image of a volcano has a waterline drawn halfway through, and it says, most of the things are below the surface. And I've always thought that they were talking about an iceberg. And so it's just, like, I don't understand why it's a volcano. I thought like that metaphor is for an iceberg, but you know, it's, I don't.
And if you're into like vintage niche fintech apparel, you might be able to find t-shirts with a volcano on them. So anyways, but more seriously, moving on. They're
moving past that.
Connectivity. Is the platform,
yeah.
And you guys have done some real material new things. You've become a CRA in the last year. I could go ahead and talk about
exactly.
The ones too, or
so,
I'll call them out.
So since we did this last meetup, we've all evolved a lot. So the transition that we've made is going from just doing bank account connectivity to doing a lot of work on top of the network on top of it. So we've always thought of ourselves as a network, but we've never been able to build a lot of products that truly leverage the value of the network because the network just wasn't big enough. We didn't have enough data that was coming through the system. So over the past 2 years, you've seen us launch a lot of products that are very focused on delivering that network value. So some examples of that are we launched a CRA subsidiary, a consumer reporting agency subsidiary, so that we could build kind of credit and decisioning products. Some of the products that we're working on under that subsidiary are things like cash flow prediction scores, asset verifications, so on and so forth. So we're working on a bunch of products to help a consumer get a loan better.
And for your customers of Plaid, why become a CRA? What does that unlock for your customers?
Because our customers could then use the data to make a lending decision. If we weren't a CRA, they couldn't use the data to make a lending or eligibility decision.
Or if they did, they'd have to do a lot of work on top of it themselves, whereas you can build more foundational insights and package them for them.
We're getting to the point where our lawyers would tell me to ask them to say the correct answer. I don't exactly know the correct answer there, but I know that being a CRA is really crucial so that people can make eligibility decisions.
Yep.
And I'm aware that this is also being recorded, thus our lawyers would ask me to stop talking.
Yeah. So check out the website if you're curious what exactly that means from a product perspective.
Exactly. So building products to help consumers get loans better and build tools to help lenders better understand consumers. So leveraging a lot of the aggregate data on our data set to build that out. So that was big push number one. Big push number two was around risk and fraud. So for a user that's connecting a bank account, generally the thing they do before connecting a bank account is verify their identity. We acquired a wonderful identity verification company called Cognito. We've helped to then put a bunch more effort into that, a bunch more resources behind it, and really soup up the IDV product that they have. But the coolest thing that you can do is now you can tie the verified identity to a bank account. So the next time the consumer comes back, they link a bank account. And we can automatically say, well, there's a verified identity tied to this bank account. Would you like to verify the identity in this way? So the nice thing is we can start to see all of these repeat users. We can do things like recognize that they're coming back. We can make the bank account linking way faster and easier.
It's a great consumer experience. If you haven't linked account in Plaid recently, do it.
Do it like
faster.
A few hundred times today, preferably.
The more do it times once, you do it, you'll see it's faster and better than it used to be.
Exactly. So we're skipping a lot of steps there. And that's been fun. And then the last area that we're really exploring is around bank-linked payments. This is like fairly early for us, but we've started to see more and more traction around merchants wanting to do bank-linked payments or bill pay companies wanting to do bank-linked payments. So we built a lot of features to enable them to do that. So that's a little earlier in our roadmap, but we're pushing on it hard.
And you also, I think, built a fraud consortium.
Beacon. Oh yeah, we also have a fraud consortium. So we've done a lot of things. We have a fraud consortium where any fintech company, and actually this is very relevant, hopefully to many of you in the room. Most of our customers will over time contribute back all of the fraud that they see on the users that are signed up for their platform. So let's take an example of Robinhood. If Robinhood sees a user trying to commit fraud, be it account takeover, be it friendly fraud, they can actually report back to us. In this fraud consortium that we have, it's called Beacon. They report back to us, hey, we saw friendly fraud on this account on this date for this amount. We'll then store that and we'll federate it out to anyone else that has that same bank account linked to Plaid so that you can see that friendly fraud was attempted. Yep. And this is actually a really cool product and one that I think only we can do because we have as many customers.
Yeah, you guys have a great platform connectivity to be able to do that. There are some like historical antecedents like EDIP or early warning system, which the banks own, but it's very hard for fintechs to use. So for Plaid as a company to...
Well, fraud should be a non-exclusive game. Like we believe very much that all the fraud players should win. We believe that they should all do, or all the anti-fraud players should win. Sorry, said that a little wrong. We believe that all the anti-fraud products should do really well. And as a fintech company, you're going to want to choose the best ones for your use cases. We're hopeful that we can add another option to that set. And we've seen a lot of value with our customers. But yeah, I want early warning systems to do really well. I want all of the other fraud product, anti-fraud products to do really well.
Yep, totally. You also hired a president. You went out looking to hire a chief products officer, which I think people understand what that typically means, but you hired a president instead. What does a president do? Tell us a little bit more about Jen and then why you decided on that role and that individual.
We did hire a president. She started 3 weeks ago, so I'm thrilled to have Jen at Plaid. We didn't intend to hire a president. We intended to hire a chief product officer. So the way that Plaid is organized is perhaps a little confusing. So we run in this system that we call...
Subtext here is if you're building an organization in fintech as a founder, it's a good idea to think about different ways of structuring it. And so it's interesting to hear Plaid's way of structuring their organization. Maybe you'll say...
Structuring orgs is incredibly... If you're building like a large organization and you want to talk about it, just call me. It's like incredibly complex. So we run in a series of business units. We call them goal-based teams. We use all sorts of weird names and acronyms inside of Plaid that you could call it a business unit or you could call it a goal-based team. If I call it a goal-based team, then you ask what makes a goal-based team unique, and I can tell you all of the things that make us unique, and you don't assume that we're doing it in the same way that Google or Facebook does business units. So we have all these weird names. Anyway, effectively, we have business units, and then kind of the leader of each business unit is generally a product or an engineering leader. Sometimes they're a business line leader. And we were looking for someone that could oversee the four business units and then like the four or five platform teams that we had. We call that role chief product officer. The person that we found is Jen Taylor. She was previously the chief product officer for Cloudflare for 7 years, had this amazing track record. And frankly, she was just more senior than we thought we would find for this role. And we were thrilled.
Yeah. I hope Jen's not listening right now.
I don't know if she's here. She was here earlier. But we're so thrilled to have her here. She's like a huge inspiration to me. I think the depth of caring and quality of customer conversations that she's able to have, even just 3 weeks in, is like astounding to me. When I asked her why she loved product roles, her answer was, I love making customers happy. And like that's the best answer that I've ever heard. So. I'm thrilled to have her here. Still onboarding, but I'm excited to let her do all the hard things, and I'll do all the easy things.
Different roles can mean different things at different companies, but so for a president, it's basically combining the customer connectivity and commercial interest with the product insight. Like, is that the, as well as just being a senior, high quality, very capable leader?
Yeah, so overseeing all of our business units, overseeing our product team, design, data science, biz ops. And then she's responsible for, we look at our revenue in two slices. So one is the sales and account management side, where our COO is responsible for 100% of our revenue. The other way that we look at our revenue is the products that we're actually selling, where Jen is responsible for 100% of revenue. And having both a president and a COO that are both responsible for 100% of revenue is great, because then it's very covered.
Yeah, having single point of contact for certain things is very powerful. And then hiring great senior executives can often indicate maybe path towards IPO. You are welcome not to answer this question, but question if or when, what would or would not make sense?
The plan is that eventually we will IPO. Also, hiring senior execs means that you've hired great senior execs, and sometimes you need great senior execs to run a company. So we hired a CFO also last year. That immediately set off all these headlines of Plaid hired a CFO and they're going to IPO. And my response to all of that was, we needed a CFO. We didn't have a CFO, and we're a pretty big company. So in this case, it's the exact same. Jen is a wonderful addition to the team, but that shouldn't indicate anything.
And how long did the CFO search take? I think it sometimes can be surprising to people, because finding a CFO, in my experience, takes a lot of time to find the right
Infinity.
Person.
Like 2.5 years.
Yeah.
It took a while to find the right person.
Yeah. So if you see someone who's hired a CFO, you can like send them a note and say, congratulations, because they've probably been working on it for two years. Yeah. I feel good about it. Cool. And then in terms of other tailwinds, for Plaid, 10-33 and what that means.
Yeah. Does anyone know? Raise your hand if you know what 1033 is. Great. Now we get to talk about nerdy regulatory stuff. This is going to be really wonderful. All right, so raise your hand if you know what open banking is. Okay, a few more people. Perfect. Open banking are the rules that exist in Europe to say basically, hey, every bank, you have to have an API and you have to open up this kind of data. And when they launched those rules in Europe, they launched them basically without a fintech industry really existing. There were, of course, a few fintech companies that were very early. And so these rules created a lot of changes for banks, and they hoped that they would spark a fintech industry to exist. In Europe, I think there's some pros and cons about those rules. We don't need to go into it too much. But in the US, the regulators have always had this kind of latent authority to enforce APIs on banks. It was part of Dodd-Frank when that was written kind of post-2008 financial crisis. And the section of Dodd-Frank that gives the CFPB this latent authority is called Section 1033. So if you hear people talk about 1033, what they mean is open banking in the US. What's happening right now is that the CFPB, the regulator that has the oversight over this kind of like a latent right to ask the banks to build APIs, they're writing all the rules for it. So they're starting to say, hey, banks, you're going to have to actually build APIs, and they're going to have to do these things, and here's how it's going to work. And it's been like a 5 or 6 year like back and forth process with the industry, where the regulators will come talk to people in the industry, or they'll ask the banks, hey, what do you think of this? What should we do? And then, you know, we'll respond, or the banks will respond, and then they'll do some things, and they'll not do some things, and they'll have a new administration. And so it's been this long back and forth. But the good news is that we're getting close. We think that this year there's going to be a final rule published on Section 1033. So basically saying, banks, you have to have APIs, and the APIs have to effectively do these things. The crucial component, and
another way of articulating the same idea: consumers own their data, banks should make it available for third parties to.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's what I'm most excited about is that we are articulating like stake in the ground. Consumers own their financial data in the U.S. Banks have to give it to them. But the complexity is like, how are we going to get all the banks to build APIs? Are the APIs actually going to work? How are we going to deal with the consumer experience here? And then how are we going to get all of the now thousands of fintech companies that are already out there to transition onto all these bank APIs? And so this has been like, I describe a lot of the work that Plaid does. We have this amazing team internally that just focuses on working with the banks and building tools to help banks kind of enable data access. I describe it as like a hamster wheel that like every now and then touches the ground and you move like an inch forward. And then you have to like run the hamster wheel for a long, long, long time. Then it touches the ground and you move an inch forward. And so we're like finally like inching towards this this open banking rule in the US, which I think is going to be awesome, but it's going to be a lot of work. Though I do think that will be an additional huge tailwind towards fintech. Maybe not this year, because the rule is going to not probably come into effect until, it's probably not going to be published until the end of the year, and then it'll come into effect kind of going into next year. But I think over the next 3 or 4 years, it's going to be a huge boon to digital finance in the US.
Yeah, and stack that on top of. Yeah, long answer, but consumers own their data, can move forward, which is great. And then you start combining with other kind of slow moving things that are finally happening, real-time payment rails in the US, pay by bank connectivity. How do you see Plaid's role in the ecosystem of real-time payments around pay by bank, those kinds of products?
We love it, and it's moving way too slowly. So we've been really focused on building the tools to enable RTP and other kind of RTP is the TCH.
It's both a generic term meaning real-time payments and a specific term, which is RTP by the clearinghouse. And then there's FedNow, which is a form of real-time payments, but
exactly.
Owned by the feds.
And so effectively, there are like 100, 200, or less than 100 big banks that are able to enable real-time payments. And there's a few hundred small banks that have enabled FedNow, which is, again, the Fed's version of RTP. We've been doing a lot of work to try to both influence how these products are built and get them scaled a little bit more broadly, and then create kind of an easier consumer behavior to opt into it. But there's a lot of roadblocks being put up by the industry. There are a lot of incentives to not have real-time bank payments work in the US. The primary one being interchange, where a lot of people get paid a lot of money on interchange, and real-time bank payments don't have interchange, at least not in the same model. There is actually some meaningful incentives for the originating institution, but they're not.
Interchange being one, I'd also argue net interest income, slow-moving payment rails means deposits sit idle, you collect float on them as well. But that's a lesser thing compared to the card rails and the card networks.
Yeah, I think it's undoubtedly very true. Yeah. I'm not sure that anyone's optimizing for that necessarily, but they might be. Yeah. They wouldn't necessarily tell me.
Yeah.
So we're doing a lot of work, and I think that will be really great. We've seen real-time payments be very valuable in like payouts use cases. And we've seen, like, frankly, we've built that, we've launched it to our customers. That's been like a product that a lot of them have loved. pay-ins use cases has been a lot slower.
So we're now 2 months into 2024. What kinds of things should we be looking out for Plaid this year?
First, I would plug. We're doing. We always kind of towards the middle to end of Q2 do our annual customer conference. You should be on the lookout for that. It was called Threads last year, and then some very nice company launched this big product called Threads. And so I've been told that we shouldn't use the name Threads anymore because it'll be confusing. But I'm not sure that we shouldn't use the name Threads. All right. Does anyone think that we should keep the Threads name or should change? Or keep the Threads name. Raise your hand. Okay. Change the Threads name. All right. It seems like more people want to change the Threads name than keep the Threads name. That's what my marketing team tells me too, but I'm not sure.
Where is it going to be? Is it going to be here?
It's going to be virtual, and we'll do a bunch of, I think we're still debating this, but we might do some like get-togethers where people can get together and like, you know, have a beer and watch it. So that's like the big product announcement for the year. I can't tell you what we're going to announce yet because then I'd steal the thunder.
So stay tuned for that. Maybe Threads event.
Exactly.
And then that'll be some data.
And then I think a lot of the other stuff that you'll see, so you'll see us pushing really hard on our anti-fraud products, the anti-fraud consortium. That'll be a really big one. And then you should see some launches around our credit products too.
Cool. Awesome. And then we also have a lot of founders, builders in the audience. Any advice you would give to people who are thinking about starting something in fintech, either opportunity areas or more tactically about how to operate, find an idea, execute an idea, hire a team?
How much time do we have?
We're great on time. We're
like four hours for that question. I would be happy to do my best to answer like kind of in some specific areas. I would say if you're thinking of founding a fintech company, go do it. Like honestly, there has never been a better time, in my opinion, to start a company. Not in my working career. I'm sure maybe historically there's been, but like in the last like 10 plus years, I couldn't imagine a better time to start a company. Specifically, I actually couldn't imagine a better time to start a fintech company. There's a handful of areas that I think will be.
Yeah, I'll add a sense of urgency to that, and that I think it's actually gets slightly harder. So there's kind of three things: there's capital, there's talent, and there are ideas. The availability of capital has actually been pretty stable. There's a lot of pre-seed and seed funding. The availability of ideas, still a lot of them. I think the talent market is about to get tighter. I think a lot of companies are about to start ramping hiring. And if you're an early stage founder, it sucks when you have to go up against Plaid, Stripe, Meta, Facebook, Amazon, and the salaries they can pay. So I think the talent market is going to get tighter. And when you're really young, that really matters. So if you're thinking about starting something now, it's probably the perfect time. And it'll probably get a little bit harder. So
I agree with that. Yeah. I fully agree with that. I think in terms of spaces, like one that we haven't talked about yet is the PFM space. Everyone thought that this was dead. We've seen a huge resurgence in the PFM space since they shut down Mint. Mint basically was the only gigantic free product that was out there. Now everyone's paying for PFMs. And so we're seeing a ton of our customers and a ton of other companies launch personal financial management tools, budgeting apps basically, as a user acquisition channel. So that's been fascinating. We started Plaid as a personal financial management app, and that failed, and then we pivoted into building Plaid. So minimally, you'll learn something, and you have some pivot opportunities. But I think broadly, like there's a ton of like B2B opportunity as well. Anything that you can sell to a bank, anything that you can sell to like a large-scale lender, I think those are great opportunities to build. And then I'm still bullish on the long term of kind of like consumer payments, consumer wallets. I think there's a lot of still interesting ideas left in there.
That's awesome. And to wrap up, I have some rapid fire quick ones for fun. So we have three. It's going to be two choices. You pick one of them. So the first one is San Francisco or New York?
San Francisco, of course.
There you go. Easy one.
That was an easy one. A
little bit harder. ARR or EBITDA?
Rule of 40?
Rule of 40. That's a good answer. Good answer. And then the last one, in person or remote?
Oh man, in person, obviously, but it's very hard to convince many of our engineers that are remote.
Let's make the question easier. If you're starting a company and you've got two people and your first engineer, in person or remote?
Oh, there's no chance I would start a remote company. I would definitely start an in-person company.
That'd okay, be way now more make fun. It harder. Plaid, in person or remote?
Hey, Bill, what do you think?
Bill, where do you live?
Yet he's here for this. He comes in frequently. And so and both yet, is the yet, correct yeah. answer.
There we go. And then because we're also here talking about San Francisco, why this is a special place, I also wanted to get five recommendations from you. So first, your favorite activity in San Francisco.
It's not quite in San Francisco, but I love cycling and surfing in Marin.
Yes. Part of what's great about here is you have such immediate outdoor access, 10, 20, 15 minutes from downtown, which is amazing.
Yes.
Related to that, favorite hike in the Bay Area?
I haven't been hiking as much lately, but you can't beat Muir Woods. It's just a good, easy one, really close by.
I love Bolinas Ridge Trail. It's probably my favorite on top of
Bolinas Ridge. Is good too.
So that's nice too. Favorite park in the city?
The Bolinas Beach. That's not in the city either, but that's the place that I like to go. So, I run in Golden Gate Park a lot, but
You can't surf in the park. I can answer my own questions too, because I'm asking the questions. I love the new Tunnel Tops in the Presidio, so if you haven't checked it out, go check it out. And then favorite neighborhood?
So I live on the edge of the Mission, and I don't feel like I'm mature enough to live in Noe Valley, though technically you would call my address Noe Valley. So I've renamed this section. It's called Mission West. If you live just on the southwest corner of the Mission, technically in Noe Valley, you can call it Mission West as well. I encourage you all to tell your realtors that name so that we can get it on Google. So that's my favorite neighborhood.
Mission West, it's great. Mission Everyone West. Should boost their own neighborhood. Love it. And then finally, favorite fintech community? Cambrian.
The Plaid Cross Cambrian community. Hopefully we can make them work together.
Beautiful.
I think Carly has a mic back there. So Carly, you get to choose the questioners.
Thanks. So, my question is, Plaid has really been the leader in creating the real-time payment space in the U.S., but we are still missing, I come from India, the Indian UPI and Brazilian Pix. So when do you think U.S. will have a real-time payment system, which is open loop, without not a closed loop system?
I'll repeat the question because I'm not sure the recording will pick it up. So the question is, when will the U.S. have real-time payments? Because we are behind India, Brazil, and a lot of other places.
Right.
So I think the pessimistic answer is never. The difference in India and Brazil is that you had the government come in with a strong mandate, a strong point of view, in a way that I don't think that the U.S. regulators can do, frankly, certainly would do. And so I think you'll end up having a market-developed solution for real-time payments. Now, I think that that's beneficial and it's negative. The positives of it are that it'll end up being much more tailored towards specific use cases. It'll be something that is very much market-driven, so it'll be very much focused on creating profitable and high-value use cases. But it'll never be as complete or ubiquitous as you would get in countries that might regulate it. I hope I'm wrong, by the way. I hope someone comes in with a stronger point of view on the regulatory side.
I have a question. What challenges did Plaid face, specifically in your early days when you were acquiring your first clients, your first business partners, and how did you overcome these challenges?
I was actually talking to someone about this earlier today. The hardest challenge that we face is that no one believed that fintech would be a market. And it's truly insane to me to be in a room of this many people that care about fintech and look at our customer list and see how many people are building fintech companies. But truly, the hardest challenge that we face, people talk about product market fit. We had a product that fit the needs of the customers, but the market didn't really exist. And so a lot of what we did in the early days were events like this. We had this tradition of doing this event called a Plaid Out, which was poorly named, where we would just invite everyone that we knew to come to our office on a Friday night. We did this once a month because we wanted to convince people that other people were actually building fintech companies. It was that early in the market. And so a lot of it was cultivating a market in and of itself, which took forever. Plaid's early years were really slow. And then we hit an inflection point probably 5 or 6 years in. It was a lot of rolling the stone up the hill.
I might have worked for a firm that passed on market sizing a couple of times before eventually coming back.
Well, that was another issue where every VC passed on us because they didn't believe that the market existed. Rex did work for a company that said no to Plaid a few times.
They said yes too.
Eventually, yeah, they said yes. I'm super happy. Persistence.
Thank you.
Hey, Zach, my name is Dash. I'm curious if you see any opportunities for credit unions and if that's anything different from maybe some of the larger institutional players.
I'm a big believer in small banks, credit unions, things that serve local communities. And everybody Well, not everybody. There is a narrative in financial services that the small banks are going away, and little by little they actually are. But I think that you've seen some credit unions have a huge amount of impact in local communities and get really, really entrenched there. I think that we could and should see a lot more of this. I was speaking with someone from BECU, which is a credit union in, I think they're based in Seattle. I think it was Boeing Employees Credit Union, but now it's, I think it's less affiliated with Boeing and much broader. And just the level of investment that they're able to do in their community because they choose a really narrow area to focus on, and they choose a specific population, and they really want to have an impact in that population's lives. I think it's amazing. So I wish there were more. Like, I do think that there's a lot of opportunity. The scalability as a credit union is very different. Obviously, it's a lot less than a big bank. But I hope that we see more of it.
A quick call out, there are a bunch of credit unions that actually are doing some interesting work. So Boeing is one that you mentioned. Navy Federal Credit does some interesting work. And then on the market share side of things, I'm about a year out of date here, but they've grown market share in auto loans, deposits, and some other things. I don't think enough people actually realize that's happened in the last 5 to 10 years. I don't know where it's been in the last 24 months, though.
Navy Federal is way bigger than anyone gives it credit for, and they have way more impact. And they have, I think, no branches? Maybe one branch?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's basically
it would make sense that Navy is kind of geographically distributed.
Yeah,
so.
they've done a good job.
Yeah, so what do you think about the future of crypto?
Let's see, my predictions on crypto are there will be another hype cycle. I don't know when it's going to be. And I think the only like serious thing that I...
I'll add a layer to, which is how do you think about crypto in the U.S. versus internationally?
Yeah, I don't know. The only thing that I've seen that's like really gaining traction these days is international contractor payouts. And I think that's a very real use case. I was talking to a payroll company who said that like 20 or 30%, and they're really an international payroll company, 20 to 30% of their payouts are coming in the form of USDC. So it does feel like USDC is gaining some very real world traction, but I couldn't speak to crypto more broadly.
That's my two cents. I think there'll be real use cases for real utility that happen to wrap crypto rails internationally, but I focus on the US more, as do you, and so it's hard to understand what those exactly might be. Let's do maybe one more. You want to do one or two?
Hey.
Let's do two more, and then we'll be done.
On crypto, how big crypto needs to be for Plaid to count it as one of the core product?
So the reality is it's really about our customers and what our customers need. We built a product that helps aggregate your crypto accounts in the same way you could aggregate all of your bank accounts and look at your overall balance. We've built one kind of aggregating blockchain assets, and that works really well, and we'll continue to push on that. We have a wallet linking product. So we have a handful of kind of crypto-oriented products. The reality is our customers aren't asking for it as much these days. They're not wanting to build products on top of it as much these days. As our customers want to build more products on top of it, we'll absolutely go there.
Okay, cool. And last question.
Hi, thanks so much. I'm curious, there's been a lot of discussion about interchange maybe going away for credit cards. What do you guys think that'll do for fintechs that are trying to get started and maybe thinking about that as a revenue source?
First, I think it's going to stay here for a really long time. But if there are big market shifts, it tends that the people who can move more quickly benefit. Small companies tend to move more quickly. So I don't think it's really going to happen in any material way. But dislocations tend to benefit smaller companies, is my perspective. Of course, it can be depressing how slow and entrenched our system is, and how even when you have movements, large organizations and interest groups can block that out, but that would be my general framework.
Yeah, it's interesting. I talked to the exec, the very senior exec at a very large company that cares about interchange, and I will say no more. But the statement that he made was, "We live on Interchange Island." And so if you think about the interchange in the United States versus the interchange in basically any other country in the world, it's 10x. And the reason for that is that there's a lot of entrenched interest in keeping it that high. And there's a lot of people that get paid in order to like through interchange. So the system is super hard to change. I think the impact on fintech, if interchange were to be significantly altered, it would be a little scary for anyone that makes money off of debit card issuing. So that's a huge driver of revenue to a bunch of fintech companies, and that could create issues. On the flip side, it could open up a lot of new opportunities. So the economics of a lot of merchants would be better. You would see maybe merchants building more payments-oriented products, which could be good. So hard to say exactly what would happen. I am like tracking this this Discover thing, Discover Capital One thing. It would be fascinating if Capital One were able to invest in Discover in a way that would then create effectively a third major network, and that would then create a lot more competition. And I think competition is more likely to impact interchange rates than regulation, though, I mean.
So that's a wrap. We covered a bunch of great ground. One, why optimism is warranted in fintech right now. Plaid, for example, has seen a record number of new customers signing onto their platform. Not quite the narrative you might expect if fintech is retrenching. Two, also talking about what's next for Plaid and the products and features they're going to build on top of their core account connectivity platform. Things like the Fraud Consortium, or even more interestingly, Pay by Bank. And then three, we also talked about why the Bay Area and San Francisco are such a very special ecosystem. If you enjoy this interview, feel free to check out the rest of the channel. We've got a bunch of interviews with other founders in fintech, and we've got more coming up soon with some great folks who are also based in the Bay Area. So feel free to hit like or subscribe. And until then, catch you next time.